Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Loveline. This is Loveline with Dr. Chris.
On Channel Q.
Oh, yeah. Monday, the beginning of yet another week. But don't worry, we're here Monday through Thursday, 7 to 9 p.m. Pacific Standard Time, 10 p.m. Eastern Standard Time to help you get through that week. Give you some mental health facts, some sex talk, a few laughs here and there. Question of the night's up on our Loveline IG page. Today's question is, this one's triggering. It's going to be good. How long should you wait before you date a friend's ex? Yes, that's right. When is it okay, assuming it ever is, to date your friend's ex? It's a good one. I have a lot of thoughts about this one. I've even done it myself. So we'll be breaking that on down. We're also going to be sitting down later in the show with Dr. Wider, women's health expert, friend of Loveline, always on the show. And we're going to be talking about some things in the news around body shaming, the impact that has on us culturally. I'm going to tell you a little story about something that happened to me myself a couple days ago around body shaming. And of course, breaking down summer sadness. You know, we talk a lot about seasonal affective disorder. It's very comfortable and understood that the dark, cold weather makes people depressed. But what about those that have anxiety and depression around the summer? And I just don't mean because of the heat necessarily, also because of the anxiety around feeling the need to have a lot of socialization when maybe that's just not who you are. But let's talk about some news that's going on in the world today. This is a really, really big deal. I think in August, we're going to be having Damon back on. He's also a friend of the show. One of the most, you know, well-researched, well-thought-out prep experts I know, Damon Jacobson. So he'll be on to talk about prep. But I want to talk about what's going on in the news. And before we get there, let me just give you all a little background. So for those that aren't familiar with prep, get familiar with it. This is something everyone should know about. It is for every gender expression and every body and every sexual orientation. Often prep is talked about as though it's only for male-bodied individuals or men who have sex with men. But prep, also known as Truvada, pre-exposure prophylaxis, is a daily pill. And it has up to a 99% effectiveness at preventing transmission of HIV, which means if you're taking the pill, 99% effective at protecting you from contracting HIV. That is massive, especially for people that are high risk. So why is there news? Well, New York, it's actually the New York City Department of Health and Mental Hygiene, has released new guidelines around another form of use of PrEP called on-demand. This is something that had started to get a little bit of conversation because basically what happens is when you go on PrEP, thankfully, you have to go get tested. I think it's every 90 days because it does do some damage for some on their liver or their kidneys. It's a daily pill. It's not a Tic Tac. And you also get tested for, you know, other things, hopefully around that. But not everyone wants to take a daily pill. Not everyone's insurance covers it. Not everyone can afford it. So on-demand use is another way to take it. And basically what it means is that 24 hours before you're going to have sex or high-risk sex, you take it just the day before, and maybe even as little as 2 hours before. You take it before the sexual activity. Then you take a dose a day after and one more dose a day after that. So it's three pills just in that concentrated moment versus taking it every single day. And this is important because I do have some clients I work with and friends that are taking PrEP consistently and only having sex maybe every couple months. Not necessarily someone who's high risk or the best use of it. So an on-demand, hey, if you know weekend's coming, you might maybe pop that bad boy on Thursday or Friday. You're good to go on Saturday, pop another one on Sunday, and you're back to work Monday morning with a smile on your face. You know what I mean? So these are things we've got to talk about. Now, even though New York Department of Health and Mental Hygiene has released guidelines, it is important to recognize that the CDC, Center for Disease Control, has not currently adopted on-demand use as part of their own guidelines. They will get there. I believe they will, because the studies are showing that it's completely effective, but they're not there yet. So important to call that out. Cambridge, God bless you over there in the UK. They've released a study on their most popular sexual fetishes and things that are searched for in the Google. Now, we talked about what's going on over here in America. So the top three, now I'll tell you, I think this is a symptom of me just working in the field as long as I have, where I was like, yeah, yawn. That's all you got. But weigh in. Maybe you think otherwise. 833-LOVE-001, 833-LOVE-001. Number one key search term when people were looking for sexual things online, BDSM. I was like, yeah, all right. Not that interesting. You know what I mean? Second most popular one. They're using the term, because this is the word that people actually typed in, cross-dressing. Not a word we really use anymore that's kind of fallen out of favor. So I use the word maybe like gender role play or dressing in opposite gendered clothing. But that was number two. The last one, the number third, the number three, the number third. It's one of those days. Foot fetish. It's all about the feet over there. Now, for those of you that haven't ever incorporated feet into your sexuality, I encourage you to do so. It's a very pleasurable thing to receive. And again, look, I was just in Toronto as part of I was hosting an event, long story short, and I was just talking about myths of male sexuality, which I will bring back to the show and share with all of you because it was, you know, I think it was a really good talk I gave. But one of the things I was challenging everyone to do that was at my talk, and I'm taking it on the road when I'm on my book and lecture tour, which, by the way, I just released my Chicago and Seattle dates for my book and lecture tour in November. Soon I'll be releasing, I think, Albuquerque, I don't know, a whole bunch of places. But I'm challenging everyone to really push on their own sexual body boundaries, right? Because it's about blending sexual positivity and body positivity. And the sexual orientation or whatever it is that you think you enjoy, that's a starting point. That's based on a lot of limits of anxiety you have about your own body, the own levels of desirability, your own comfort with intimacy, slut shaming, gender, like all these things, homophobia, they really limit and block us. So I say to people, and this is a little exercise I've done in my office, what are the parts of your body that you'll engage or allow to be engaged? Start pushing on those boundaries. What would happen if you folded feet in? Your partner's feet, your feet? Just ways to expand pleasure and eroticism, to build more intimacy, to get closer, to really push through blocks. Like, why are we not incorporating our total full bodies? Because know this, our entire body is our erogenous zone. So when people just talk about the genitals, our sexual anatomy as being our erogenous zone, they're leaving out vast territory and geography that has the capacity to deliver pleasure. Yeah, so push on those boundaries, y'all. All right, coming up next, we're going to be talking with Dr. Wider, talking about my story about some body shaming, ways to push through it, and then, of course, breaking down summer sadness when summer gives you the blues. Listening to Loveline on the new Channel Q and radio.com.
Loveline
with Dr. Chris
on Channel Q.
All right, we got our question of the night up on our Loveline IG page. Tonight's question, it's a juicy, juicy, juicy one. When is it okay, if at all, of course, but when is it okay to date your friend's ex? It's on our Loveline IG page. Weigh in on that or give us a call, 833-LOVE-001, 833-LOVE-001. Now we got Dr. Jen Wider, women's health expert. We're talking a little bit about body shaming. Dr. Jen, how are you?
Hi, how are you, Dr. Kress?
I'm doing awesome, and it's really timely that we're talking about this. Let me share a little story with you. And again,
yes,
I'm further along than most people, right? I work in the field. I try to hold the bar high for myself. I've done a lot of work around my own, you know, self-esteem and body confidence. I was at a coffee shop 3 days ago, walked right up, minding my own business, having a good day. Someone who I barely know, I've met a few times, first thing they say to me is, "Wow, you look like you've lost weight," and then rubs my stomach.
Oh my God.
Yes. Now it's like a couple things. Maybe I was trying to gain weight and that triggered me.
Right.
Maybe I'm losing weight because of a health issue and you're touching
exactly
my body.
Right. It's insane. And I think you bring up this is such a great story because a lot of people think that body shaming is reserved for women. And recently in the news, about 2 days ago, Jason Momoa was, for those of you that don't know, but most people do, was in Game of Thrones, and is a man. But he was on vacation with his family in Venice, and he was spotted with his shirt off, sporting what would probably be, you know, every guy's dream body. And he was shamed relentlessly on Instagram for what they called a dad body. So, you know, men are not immune to this. And I think what's really interesting, Chris, is I've done work with a lot of adolescents, and what I've learned is a lot of adolescent boys, as they're going through pubertal development, have a tremendous amount of body image issues in the same way that their female counterparts are. So oftentimes parents feel that they're in the clear when they're raising sons, but they aren't necessarily, because the guys have so much pressure on them to be concerned about their body appearance and what they look like and do they stack up next to their peers. So it's universal. It's really not gender independent. It really is a universal issue.
And I like the way you're calling that out, that don't think because of the gender of your child that you're out of the woods with this. It's something we need to talk about, especially around the normalization for men of gym culture, where I'll be at the gym and I'll hear a lot of things said that people nod their head because they're used to hearing it. And I'm going, hold up, you guys, that's disordered eating talk. That what you are all nodding your heads and agreeing with is very problematic dialogue.
Right. And I think that what you're describing is something very universal and something that we've really come to accept, because there's an entire culture around people making money off of everybody hating themselves and hating their bodies and disordered eating. And I think that there's a tremendous impact on our culture and an industry that is a $4.2 trillion market when it comes to this. And so, you know, for a lot of these different industries, it's really, really amazing for them from a monetary and financial standpoint for people to hate their bodies and to work out and to, you know, have disordered eating patterns and go on all the fad diets, et cetera, et cetera.
I'll just say this, like bringing it back to poor Jason's experience. I know for me, I've been, and again, just to, I guess, call out my body privilege. You know, I'm also someone who has the physique that a lot of people might see as, quote unquote, like a gym body. But nonetheless, yes, there's been photos that I've been shirtless in. And I thought, if I post that on my social media, I better make sure that I'm in the right mood where I'm open to hearing people's possible negative critique and thoughts about it. And I realized generally I'm not. And it disheartens me that we live in a culture where that's something people have to think about, because again, I'm further along in my psychological health in that I'll deal with it far better than most people. But this is something that can really push some people into some severe mental health issues.
Absolutely. And the studies completely back what you just said. You know, when people are fat shamed or even thin shamed, oftentimes people, you know, people that are doing that, and if it's a loved one that they're fat shaming with the hope that they're going to improve their health by losing weight, say someone is obese and has some risk factors for heart disease and diabetes, et cetera, fat shaming somebody does the exact opposite. So it throws people into a state of depression. It pushes people towards anxiety and stress disordered, more disordered eating, and most people will gain weight. On the flip side of that, Chris, are people that are thin shamed. And I wanted to mention this also because, you know, we have this ideal body type in our heads as men and women in this country. And oftentimes we think that people that are thin, you know, we can say anything we want because everyone wants to be thin. But oftentimes people are going through their own process, like you said, and you may be talking to somebody that has an eating disorder. There's an example in the press that recently Amanda Seyfried, who people know from Mamma Mia, was caught thin shaming an Instagram influencer, a lifestyle fashion influencer. Her name is Ariel Charnas. She had just had a baby and had posted a picture of herself in a bikini post, you know, partum, two kids later, and very proud how she got back into shape. And Amanda Seyfried just, you know, went out and said she was glorifying an unhealthy body image and how, you know, it's unrealistic for most people. But at the same time, everybody has their own process. You know, feeling ashamed in your body is not reserved for people overweight or underweight. You know, it's sort of a universal feeling. We have to be very careful when we reach out and touch somebody's abs or we make a comment, somebody postpartum, because you may be triggering to them and you may be pushing them towards what you said is a mental health issue, without a doubt.
And that's why the message I keep trying to promote this year is, let's just stop discussing people's bodies. Let's take that off the table. Like, no more body talk. Let's talk about everything else that's going on in someone's life. Leave that alone.
I agree with you. And I think it's important for people that are suffering from this to remember that all bodies are good bodies. And, you know, our bodies are there to function. They have a purpose. And oftentimes the purpose is miraculous. And if, you know, for people that study medicine, it's mind-blowing that someone can have a baby or a body's function normally and just have urine output. I mean it. I mean, the body is such an intricate, amazing set of organs. And so that's what we need to remember, that everybody needs to feel comfortable in their own skin and put blinders on and not be concerned. But to tease and bully people under the anonymity of social media is so detrimental, you know, for a lot of people, and for you who's further along than compared to someone who's an adolescent boy, you may have, you know, I was doing this study and 50% of adolescent boys have nipple development and are very self-conscious of this. So one out of two boys will have a raised nipple for about 10 months to 24 months as they go through puberty. And it's just because of the hormones. And, you know, I have a son going through who's this age, and I know this just from some of his friends. They're very, very self-conscious, and they don't want to go swimming, and they're not wearing rash guards. And, You know, so we have to be very, very tricky. Where someone may just be teasing and not meaning it, you can throw somebody into severe anxiety and depression.
That's right. Well, thank you, Dr. Jen Wider, as always. Talking about the important things. We're going to take a little break. When we come back, we're going to be talking about summer sadness. You're listening to Loveline with Dr. Chris on the new Channel Q and radio.com.
Loveline. This is Loveline with Dr. Chris
on Channel Q.
All right, we got our question of the night up on our Loveline IG page. That's a good one. How long should you wait before you date your friend's ex? When is it okay? Oof. Oh, Samantha here shaking her head. No, 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 no. She's wiggling her finger too. Never okay, she says. I want to hear from you. So weigh in on that. We'll be breaking that on down later in the show. And phone lines are always open. 833-LOVE-001. 833-LOVE-001. We can talk it out. I got my own thoughts. I've done it. I've done it. We'll talk about it. Don't worry. Later in the show, also, we're going to be talking about the impact of mental health and social media, some new thoughts out there, some new research, and also trust. I'm telling you, it's the number one thing that helps keep a relationship together and healthy. Also, one of the number one things that really erodes at a relationship, causes it to end. So we're going to be talking about the impact of trust. Oh, I'm telling you, it's the one thing if everyone could be better about in relationships, they could far smoother. So let's talk about those that get depressed in the summer. So we've spoken about this before, so we're going to kind of take a little bit of a different slant. But just to get everyone on the same page, we talk about seasonal affective disorder. And usually it's something that's applied to those that feel depressed or sad or, you know, lowered mood in the winter, colder weather, darker times, you know, the sun's out less. Well, guess what? Summertime sadness, as Lana Del Rey was singing about, is a real thing, too. Basically, it's somewhat of the reverse seasonal affective disorder or summer seasonal affective disorder. These are a lot of big words. You can just call it summer sadness. We'll just go with that one. But, you know, it's not just fear of the heat. And to quote someone else, this is amazing. They said, well, summer is a sweaty, stinky, humid hellscape. I'm not going to disagree with that. I'm not a fan of the heat. So it is for me. So, for some people, the summer leads to things like them feeling sluggish. The heat kind of wears on them. Others, it's about fear of missing out and insecurity. That's the other perspective added to this. Why is that? Well, the summer carries with it a lot of expectations. Expectations that it's going to fix everything. We have a very positive spin that we put on the summer. Summer's coming. All will be well. It's going to be warmer out. So there's this pressure that it's going to have a positive impact, which it doesn't necessarily promise. But not only does it not promise a positive impact, it can carry a lot of weight of expectation, aka the fear of missing out. Because there's the assumption that summers are supposed to be spent with a lot of hypersocialization, a lot of travel. And that's not the case for everyone. Not everyone spends or can spend their summer at the beach, swimming, at pool parties, barbecues, fireworks. That's not the case for everyone. So how do we work with and through this? Well, the first thing is I always want to help reduce the shame. And so I want people to know it's okay if the summer bums you out. It's okay if the summer leads to more depression. It's okay if there's work to do around the expectations you carry for the summer. It's not a beautiful, healthy, fun time for everyone. So acknowledging that is a really beautiful step. Just putting name to the experience. You are not being dramatic, and there's nothing wrong with you if you don't like the summer. And that comes up a lot with online dating, where everyone's like, love hiking, love the outdoors, must love the beach. Well, not everyone does, and that's okay. But you get a lot of stares, because I'm one of those people where I'm like, actually, I like the cool weather in the dark. I love when it rains. And it's like you get a triple take. Like, people don't believe it. And there's a lot of social stigma around that. I'm telling you, there is. So the first thing is it's okay to experience that. I just the normalization of that. But also shifting your expectations of what the summer is supposed to look like. There is no right way to have your summer. Like, really, truly hear that. Not everyone has a squad or needs to run around with a squad. For some people, they're a little more isolative, where they hang out with lesser numbers of people. That's okay. There's no right way. Not everyone has to spend the summer at the beach or a pool. It's okay, like me, although I will travel and do some beach time, but it's okay to want to be in the AC. It's okay to want to catch up on movies and television shows. It's okay to want to do more indoorsy things. There is no right way to have your summer, and you really want to align it with what's ideal for you, because that's part of the summer sadness or seasonal affective disorder around summer is seeing all these images and hearing all these stories of people's vacations and time spent with their friends. And if you're not doing that, it can really weigh on you in terms of your mental health. Also, do consider the impact of the heat on your mood. That's a big deal for some people. So whereas those that get depressed in the winter, we say try to spend more time in the sunlight, we actually say the opposite for these people. Try to spend less time in the heat. Try to maybe keep the shades drawn in your home. Have it cooler, have it darker, less sun, less heat. Those are the things that are going to kind of amp that up. Also, don't isolate. Remember that just because the heat might make you tired, lethargic, sluggish, it might stress you out, it might make you feel lonely, you can still do things that are indoors, have people over, or do things that are more nighttime based when the weather's cooler, when it's a little bit darker. One of my favorite things is actually going to the beach at night. I love the beach at night. It's cool. It's dark. It's loud. It's soothing. There's not a lot of many people around. You bring a blanket and you sit down. You bring a hoodie. You can bring food. You can lay there and listen to music. You can go for a jog. I mean, it's a really stunning thing. So remember that a lot of the things you can do during the day, you can also do at night, but there's going to be less heat. Go shopping at night. Go sit outside and have dinner or drinks at night, right? So put a spin on it, but just make sure to not isolate because that's one of the things that's not going to help you kind of work through this. All right, coming up next, we're going to be sliding into those DMs. So stick around with us. You're listening to Love Line with Dr. Chris on the new channel Q and radio.com.
Love Line. This is Love Line with Dr. Chris
on channel Q.
Question of the night is up on our Love Line IG page. I'm really stoked about this one. Every now and then there's a question I'm like, oh, I can't wait to hear these answers. Because they're triggering. This one's a real trigger. This one everyone feels very strongly about. It's not one of those smooth, neutral ones. Today's question is, when is it okay to date a friend's ex? And even have you? Feel free to weigh in on that one. Have you? Yeah, you have, Samantha? You have. I have in a lot of different configurations. We'll break it all on down. Or you can give us a call, 833-LOVE-001. 833-LOVE-001. Also want to give a shout out to Mr. Jake Kaplan in his car listening to us all the way from a few blocks away. Thanks for being a loyal listener, Jake. All right, y'all. It's time to slide into them DMs. Sliding into DMs is brought to you by our friends at Trojan Condoms because it's a big old sexy world and we want you to explore with confidence. All right, here we go. Hey, Dr. D and Loveline. So, I've been proud of myself for my active effort in quitting any toxic monogamy behavior, all thanks to your show. You know, thank you. Thank you for doing the work. Beautiful. I only wish my boyfriend did the same. So, I don't mind him liking other girls' pictures anymore on Instagram. Okay, cool. Even if they are bikini pictures, and even if they are attractive, I just let it go because he's with me. So far, I'm loving this because that's exactly the perspective you should take. We're going to be talking about trust later in the show, but only date people you trust. And if you trust someone, there's no reason to get all hung up on them liking someone's photos. Let it go, y'all. But nonetheless, we go back to your question. I just let it go because he's with me. And I also understand he's human and he has eyes. That's exactly what I say. He has eyeballs. However, here comes the however. When it's me that wants to post a sexy bikini or revealing picture online, he doesn't like it or appreciate it like he does with Instagram models. He actually gets annoyed. When I've asked him about this and said, like, why does it bother you so much? And why is it okay for those girls, to get paid to boost their followers? But I can't do it. He's like, why do your friends, family, coworkers need to see you half naked? Is this a double standard or does he have a point? Yes, it's a double standard. Yes, he's engaging in what we call toxic forms of monogamy. But he's pretty standard in his thinking. That doesn't make it okay. But, you know, I think if you did a poll of the general population, most of them would prefer their partners not to show their half naked bodies. It's generally pretty threatening to most people. It shouldn't be. It need not be. And if your relationship, let me say this to the general population listening. If your relationship is threatened by the posting of a picture, you got it. You got a lot of work to do. You got a lot of work to do on that relationship. If it's so fragile, if your trust and confidence in the bond and all that you built together is so fragile that it can crumble over the posting of a photo, dear God, use that as a sign if you got a lot of work to do. You either need to get out of that relationship or you should get in some couples therapy. And that's why I love topics like this because it really brings to the surface work that needs to be done. And so maybe the answer is, well, not maybe. The answer is definitely don't shame him because it's a double standard, although it is. Does he have a point? No, but I understand where he's coming from. But use it as a sign of realizing that you want to have a deeper, bigger talk. You know, what about our relationship does make you feel confident? And are you able to really rely upon that? Is there other levels of work that we need to do? Are there things I've done that's eroded out your ability to feel okay with me doing that? And maybe you'll still land in the place where all's well, but nonetheless makes him uncomfortable. And guess what? It's okay to make your partner uncomfortable. Your job as his girlfriend is not to make sure he's never uncomfortable, especially if it goes against your ethics or politics. You're allowed to say, I hear you. I care about you. I'm willing to change it. Or you're allowed to say, I hear you. I care about you. No, I'm not willing to. I'm not willing to not post those pictures. That's something I need you to deal with, right? You have a right to do that. So good luck. But again, use it as a time to have a bigger, deeper conversation about ethics and values in your relationship. You know, this is one of those topics that it is important to be kind of on the same page about, you know, body positivity, sex positivity, and boundaries and guidelines around things like that. But, you know, again, it's okay to make your partner uncomfortable sometimes. You know, it happens. Do you have time for another one?
Yeah.
Okay. Here we go. Hey, Dr. Chris, my brother is a recovering addict and lives with my mom. He's crashed her car before. And instead of getting mad, my mom pays to fix it and then gave it to him. He sold one of his TVs for drugs. She went and bought him another. He ended up shaping up for about 6 months. And my mom would brag to everyone about how good he's doing. And she would say he would never do drugs again because he's waiting to hear back from a job. But the minute her and her boyfriend leave town, I ended up having to call an ambulance for him because he took drugs and drank and ended up calling me freaking out and we had to get him to the ER. He's fine. But my mom is understandably a mess, like she has been for over a year. If I have anything negative or tough love advice to say to her, she says I don't want to hear it. Even after all she's been through, she always says that she believes this is his wake-up call. Well, I'm tired of seeing her in pain. Me as the sister watching this, my mom, who's obviously an enabler and not living her life because she's obsessed with taking care of him. Question mark. What's the question? I understand what the question is. First off, hard to see. I understand that. So a couple things. Everyone's journey of drug use, alcohol use, and sobriety is going to be very different. Built into the model of change is stepping out into relapse. It's very rare that human beings make a decision to change a behavior and they do it right away and all's well for the rest of their lives. That's usually not the story. In the model of the stages of change, we actually expect relapse, whatever that means. It doesn't always mean full blown, but it means some sort of, you know, old behavior coming back. And in the model, it's actually a little like sidestep. It's not a back move. Because it's still part of progress, believe it or not. It's hard to see it that way, but it's part of progress. So your brother's journey is just not one of time to get sober, and life goes on, you know, forever that way. He's got a different journey. Your mom, you know, she's struggling to figure out the best way to manage this, right? She's the mother of her son. So a couple things. One, you might need to kind of back out. Might be hard for you to think of that, but it sounds like you're a little too attached to your mom's relationship to your brother. If it's hard for you to see that, you need to maybe pull back on your involvement in their relationship. Because if you've already spoken to your mom, let her know that you think that she's enabling him, et cetera, and she's not willing to hear you, then you need to maybe accept that and detach a little bit from the situation and maybe focus on living your life. If this is the choice your mom's making to be overly involved with your brother and go on this journey with him, you might need to work on respecting that because it sounds like you're a little obsessed with this as well. So that's my advice, maybe to pull yourself out of it a little bit. Can't control your mom's behavior. If she was writing in saying she was struggling, I'd say, yeah, we have 12-step programs to help you with that, therapy, all sorts of things. But you wrote in, and so I'd say maybe focus on you detaching a little bit because you're a little too tied into the outcomes of these two people's lives. It's got to be having a negative impact on you. All right, coming up next, we're going to talk about social media and the impact on mental health, but it's not going to be the topic you think we're going to be having about it. And then we talk about trust. Ah, yes, the ever-important trust. You're listening to Loveline with Dr. Chris on the new Channel Q and radio.com.
Loveline. This is Loveline with Dr. Chris.
On Channel Q.
Okay, question of the night is up on our Loveline IG page, so follow us and hit us up with your answers. It's a good one tonight. It's about when is it okay? I like that we're just saying when. We're not even implying that there's space for otherwise, but when is it okay to date a friend's ex? Samantha's over there shaking her head. No, not ever okay. Justin, what do you think? Ever okay? Just give a quick nod. No? Okay, there we go. Moving on. We'll be breaking that on down later in the show. So I want to hear from y'all what you guys think. Or give us a call. 833-LOVE-001. 833-LOVE-001. Look, I've done it. I'll tell you more about it when we get to that segment, but I've done it because I believe that everyone should be given the opportunity to see if they can find love. And if you weren't able to pull together or figure it out, you should want others in your life. That's the working theory. Now we're going to bring a little reality into that. That's just the working global theory. Sit with that. But feel free to give me a call. We'll break it down. 833-LOVE-001. All right. So social media, mental health. Look, there's a lot of urban legend around such things and some decent research. You know, I think social media gets a bad name right off the bat. I see those memes where people are at certain events and it'll say, I think there's a really popular one where people are at a concert and they're all holding up their phones recording and there's this one woman who's just watching and it's meant to, you know, shame those recording and say that she's more in the moment. I don't know. There's been some beautiful moments where having a photo or a camera phone able to capture something was able to allow me to keep it with me and to share it with people. I think social media has had some positive impacts. So, long story short, the relationship between screen time and depression. Now, mind you, I don't know if y'all know this, but on the newer iPhones, you can get your phone to give you a weekly report of your amount of screen time for the day or the week. Now, that can sometimes be something that puts a big old smile on your face or sometimes something that horrifies you. I've literally had it popped up before where I go, dear God, how many hours did I spend on my phone? Like, what else could I or should I have been maybe focusing on? And then there's times you're like, yeah, that's my life, you know, that's where I'm at. So the relationship between screen time and depression. So basically, we historically blame phones, smartphones, and social media for a lot of mental health issues, especially in teens. But a lot of the research now is realizing that in doing so, we're actually distracting from a deeper or more ongoing issue. When we're blaming the phones, we're basically saying the solution lies in the phone because that's the cause. And that's distracting us from something that might have existed beforehand. And the blame and the work isn't around the way the phone is utilized. It's looking at the actual mental health issue itself. So I think that this is a really important topic to talk about. So the question that's posed is, does social media, does the use of it go up because you're depressed or struggling with mental health issues? Thereby, it's just an, you know, supportive thing that you do secondarily. Or does the social media itself cause the depression and mental health issues? And that's a really big and important distinction. Because again, one means the issues of mental health. And the phone use is just a way to really cope and try to medicate that. Look at the mental health. And the other one is basically saying, it's all on the phone. Just change your use of the phone and all will be well. And you have to really look at which one is the case for you. And in some of these studies are looking at the impact on teens. Because who cares about adults? And that's one of the things I walk away with laughing in some of these studies. Where everything's teen focused. It's like, look, adolescence, important. But adulthood, also important. Like, let's not be ageist. Like, adults have a right to also have discussions around healthy use of phones. Jeez. The older I get, the more I feel these things. So, you know, what we're really looking at now is basically, again, we don't want to mask actual problems that need resolution by blaming the phones. And for teens right now, the massive issues that are causing mental health issues are, first off, peer competitiveness, which is all that school is about, is competing with each other. Horrible model, very American. Big academic loads that are far too stressful and overwhelming, beyond what a child should take on, the hours and focus and energy that's put into academics, parental college goals, the goals the parents have for their kids is another mental health factor, weight concerns. I was just talking to Dr. Jen Wider about that, about weight concerns, no longer just a gendered thing for people that are female identified. That is for everyone. Parents of children of all genders need to be thinking about weight concerns and trying to identify, is my child struggling with them? And also relational dynamics. Those are all major factors that play into teens' mental health, right? So we don't want to just blame the phone use because that might be a way that they're trying to actually cope. That might be their survival technique because that's something I'm seeing, the benefit of it, because it can reduce some isolation. It can create some support and also distraction, healthy distraction. It's good to be distracted. It's good to not always be focused on your academics, your sports, college, weight concerns, all those factors. So there's many kids where they're isolated and social media is actually the support. Because the work is about increasing knowledge of mental illness and really being able to identify it. And some schools are now trying to make that part of the curriculum where they're helping kids, adolescents, teens, identify mental health factors. something we got to look at. But let's not go right to blaming social media. Bam. Coming up next, we're going to talk about trust. Trust is the make it or break it of relationships. I'm telling you, it is ground zero. We're going to be talking about trust. How to build it, do you have it, why we need it. And then we'll be going to Question of the Night. Listening to Loveline with Dr. Chris on the new Channel Q and radio.com.
Loveline
with Dr. Chris
on Channel Q.
Question of the Night. It's up on our Loveline IG page. It's a good one tonight, y'all. Trigger, trigger, trigger everywhere. It's one of those ones that everyone's got strong opinions about. It's about dating a friend's ex. Can you? Should you? Have you? How long should you wait? We want to hear from you. So we'll be breaking that on down later in the show. Or give us a call. We can talk it out. 833-LOVE-001. 833-LOVE-001. Give me a call. Hang out. Ask me some questions. Ask me out on a date. Maybe I'll go. All right. So let's talk trust. Yeah, that's right. I said it's been one of those weeks. It's only Monday. All right. Trust. I'm telling you, trust is the lens through which you should constantly assess your relationship. More importantly, assess yourself. Here we go. People love when I flip it on themselves because we're really comfortable assessing others. And a lot of people will misuse some things I'm talking about as a way to examine the health of their other. And it's like, no, no, no. Use it to self-assess, right? Do I do that? Oh, I should stop doing that. Or, you know, should I reinforce this one skill that Dr. Chris is always talking about? So I want you to do more of that. So trusting. Here's the deal. In a relationship, your partner will let you down hundreds of times. So part of a relationship built in is that trust in different elements and levels and different ways for different reasons is going to in some ways get broken, right? So we still have to find a way, though, to maintain some ongoing consistent level of trust. And that's really based on believing that your partners care for you, because care is really like the caveat or the qualifier that needs to get tacked on to trust. Is if you know that someone really cares and loves you and they take accountability and responsibility, well, then we kind of roll with that. We have to allow that on some levels. Now, there's certain, you know, it's a hierarchy of what kind of trust we can allow to be broken. So let's start with the top piece. All healthy, ongoing, long-term relationships are going to have some consistent level of trust. And when the trust is broken, they're going to maybe more so see it as feeling let down or disappointed, but they're not necessarily going to stop trusting or feeling cared for. And that's important. But again, the work is about, is it that I, as an individual, need to learn how to trust more and to allow myself to trust? Or is it that I'm with someone who hasn't earned the right to be trusted or has consistently shown that they're not someone that cares for me or that I feel like is looking out for my or our best interest? And that's kind of the dichotomy that they really break down. Because if it's you, remember, you have to learn and own your own triggers. So if you're someone who struggles with trust, you have to stop acting that out. You have to stop bringing that into the relationship. That at some point becomes an internal struggle you have alone with yourself. Ah, there I am again, assuming the worst, not trusting, nothing bad has happened, nothing's been done to show that I can't believe what this person's telling me, and so I need to calm myself down and not act it out on them. That's the work. Or it is them. They're constantly going against what they said. I'm constantly not feeling cared for. They're constantly saying one thing and doing another thing, in which case you need to call it out, see if it's something that they're open to acknowledging, owning, and addressing, or you need to go. I work with far too many couples where they're willing to just hang in there and ride it out, and it makes you both miserable. And so if it is your partner that they're not worthy of consistent trust, you got to leave. Because you have to learn to trust or you have to leave, especially if you're doing the work. Because again, there's always a couple things that are at work here. We have this thing called attachment theory. It is so hyper intellectual and academic. I will not try to even hold your hand through it. But it basically is just saying that due to our early primary caregivers and the relationships we have with them, virtually unconscious to them and us, it gives us an internal working model as to whether or not we can trust people. It trains us to believe others are there for me, others care about me, or they don't. Our primary caregivers are unconscious, often around whether or not they're giving you a healthy version of that or an unhealthy version. But it's our work as adults to not keep carrying that forward and acting that out, because that's how we maintain unhealthy relationships. So we have to break down that piece. Or is it, again, our partner in real time constantly creating problems? Because again, if you don't have trust, it is definitely going to be time to break up. And so as someone who I care about says, they say, believe or leave. Those are your options. And that's what people are saying within the field of attachment theory, which basically means the relational stuff. Because again, this comes up all the time. You know, Should I be threatened that my partner's ex is working at our job? Should I be bothered or triggered that my partner's following attractive people and liking their pages? Not if you trust them, because if you trust them, what's the concern? There should be no concern or fear or worry of loss. And if you believe and have a relationship that's built on a lot of powerful things, a lot of care, love, intimacy, chemistry, compatibility, then it doesn't matter. And you learn to brush those things off. And I want you to know, when in doubt, if you're with someone who's healthy that you care about and you trust, let it go. Truly, when in doubt, let it go. Because you get to decide, what kind of day do I want to have? Or what kind of week do I want to have with my partner? That's in your hands by deciding what you're going to keep bringing forward or what you're going to let go. Look, let me tell you. I've dated someone before where everything was a level 10. They were just not willing to let anything go. Everything was threatening. Everything was upsetting. Everything was a level 10. It burned us out. It burned me out. That's not fun. It's exhausting. And nothing bad was ever happening. That was the kicker. Nothing bad ever happened, but everything felt to this person as though it was. And that is something that they were bringing forward in, out of their childhood, because they were trained to believe that people don't stick around, people don't look out for you, people don't care for you. And so they were living that, even though it wasn't happening anymore, but they weren't willing to acknowledge that it's their triggers and that they need to soothe themselves, calm themselves down, and to learn to assume the best or to trust first until shown otherwise. Because that's the working theory. Don't look for things. Assume the best and trust until shown otherwise if you're with someone who's healthy. And if you're not, you shouldn't be with that person. Like, that's what the work is about. So really examine that. Is it me or is it them? I mean, I guess that's basically the tagline there. All right, coming up next, we're going to be doing our question of the night. So you still got a few more minutes to weigh in on that. And then, of course, we'll be sliding back into the DMs. You're listening to Love Line with Dr. Chris on the new Channel Q and radio.com.
Love Line. This is Love Line with Dr. Chris
on Channel Q.
Love me some Jessie J. I love that song, Jessie J, and these two other girls whose names I don't know. I hope they have a good career ahead of them, though. Sound like they'll do something big with themselves. I hope the best for them, whoever they are. Okay, time for our question of the night. Tonight's question. I'm overly eager about this one, so I hope y'all didn't let me down with your answers. Keeping it real. All right, so tonight's question of the night was, I'll wait for it, drum roll. When is it okay to date your friend's ex? Ah, yes. Let's see what that guy's got. Hold on, let me just get my little phone ready. Okay, here we go. When is it okay to date your friend's ex? It depends on the situation, someone said. But personally, I try to avoid any romantic ventures with friends' exes. Safe. Well done. Someone else said years after or with okay from the friend that they have healed. And I agree with that part. Thank you for you just kind of qualified. So my overarching theory as the entry point is, yeah, it didn't work out between the two of you. Why not give your friend a chance to try something? Wouldn't it be great if maybe they could find love? However, share, get permission, talk about it. Make sure they've healed. Because I don't think it's something you do behind someone's back. And maybe your friend would say, wow, that's really hard to hear. Wow, I'm not over them. That's a struggle. And I'd want you to engage that and maybe say, I'm passing. It's not worth, the possibility isn't worth your hurt feelings or losing you as a friend, right? Like, get the way all that out. But I like that. Thank you for that. You know, communicate further. But if someone comes to you and says, like, hey, I have an interest in an ex of yours, how do you feel? Don't be offended. Say, thank you for caring enough about me to come and talk to me about it. And I'd advise you to please try to come from your best. And if you're uncomfortable, that's okay. Try to say, you know, I'm uncomfortable, but try it. You know, be honest. Someone said never. Hey, when is it okay to be, when is it okay to date a friend's ex? Someone said only if it's the friend that's trying to set you up with him. Other than that, never. Girl code. Hey. Hey. Someone said if they weren't serious and only after asking your friend if it's okay. Okay, I like that one. They weren't serious, ask if it's okay. No one owns anyone, you know what I mean? But you want everything to be relational and friend-like. What else do we got here? When is it okay to date a friend's ex? Depends on the breakup and how long since they broke up. That's kind of the gold standard here, I guess, is how long. Yeah, I've had some bad experiences where I met someone online, did not know that they were my most recent ex's best friend. They looked different. What can I tell you? They really, truly did. And I was all like, and they were like talking to me. They thought I knew who they were, so more shame on them, less on me. I didn't know. And then they finally, after talking for maybe the day, back and forth a bit, they're like, I guess I said something. They're like, you do know that I'm your ex's best friend. And it all came together. And I was like, oh my God, I didn't. But wasn't on good terms with that ex. I wasn't so concerned about their feelings. So we did go on a couple dates. Turns out my ex was not happy. Didn't talk to either of us ever again. Still see my ex at the gym. Still get side eye. It's years later. Woof. Okay. When is okay to date a friend's ex? Here we go. Long one. I personally think if enough time has passed, then it really shouldn't matter. I agree. I dated my friend's ex 3 years after they broke up. They dated for over a year, but she was never really into him. Cheated on him a lot at the end. Woof. Didn't care much about him when we started hanging out. I don't know if the circumstances change. If she really cared for him, blah, 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 blah. No, but that's best case scenario. They didn't date long. She cheated. She didn't care. I'm glad. Props to you. I wonder how it worked out. When is it okay to date a friend's ex? I think it's generally a bad idea to do so without first talking to the friend. Amen. Talk to the friend. I want you all to have the kind of friendship where you can go to a friend and say, hey, maybe hard to hear. I don't know how you're going to feel about this. Want to bring something forward. I've been talking to this person. I met them. I'm attracted to them. What do you think? You know, and calmly kind of talk it out. Someone said, as much as you might want to date the friend's ex, I feel it's more important to respect your friend's feelings and maintain that friendship. I could generally agree, right? Because it's possible that you might get along with this person upon dating them. We don't know. It's a crapshoot, right? And to lose a longstanding friendship over just a possibility, I mean, oof, that's a risk. Someone said, never fear a good friend. Someone else said, if they weren't serious to begin with, then I think it's all right. Oof. All right. We got a lot more answers, but that's all we're going to do right now, y'all. Hope you enjoyed my story. Okay, coming up after the break, we'll be sliding into those DMs. Listening to Love Line with Dr. Chris on the new Channel Q, radio.com.
Love Line. This is Love Line with Dr. Chris
on Channel Q.
All right, it's that time of the night. A little DM action. Slide into them. Sliding into DMs is brought to you by our friends at Trojan Condoms, because it's a big old sexy world, and we want you to explore with confidence. All right, here we go. We got a little baby question over here. Let's start with this one. Hey, Dr. Chris, I keep seeing on my timeline people sharing a post that says it's not about homosexuality or heterosexuality. It's about promoting sexuality, period. Let kids be kids. And so many people feel this way. Can you explain why this thinking is problematic? I have to like wrap my head around what you're saying here somehow. Like I'm reading it a couple times. I'm still not clear. I haven't seen this post, so I'm going to reread again what the post says. It's not about homosexuality or heterosexuality. It's about promoting sexuality, period. Let kids be kids. I'm not really sure what you're asking or what the struggle is, but let me say it like this. Sexuality does exist for kids. There are erections shown in utero. You can derive pleasure from touching your sexual anatomy from birth. Sexuality exists through our lifespan. I don't think there's anything wrong with acknowledging the sexuality of children. I think it's okay to talk to kids about people dating same sex, opposite sex, talking about the correct terminology for their bodies and talking about the fact that, yeah, touching your body sometimes derives pleasure for you. And so I'm assuming you're talking about the hypersexualization of children. I don't really know. So that's my answer. Moving on to the next one. Hey, Dr. Chris, I'm asking this at midnight on a Saturday, so who knows if you'll ever see it or answer, but I need your advice. I like those questions. My boyfriend and I worked together at a restaurant. A guy got hired that I hooked up with 7 years ago in high school. He's now my best friend's baby daddy. My boyfriend knows we hooked up because it's a small town. Yikes. And he was asking about him, and he was saying it'll be weird working with him because our girls are best friends. And I said, oh, you guys might actually even get along because he's pretty cool. And then World War III. He said, I'm disrespectful. I shouldn't have said that. I shouldn't say that someone hooked up with is cool. It's so messed up. He said he can't get past how disrespectful I am. Should I apologize and stop the argument? I didn't say he was hot or amazing in bed or anything like that. Something wrong with me for being stubborn and not apologizing for someone I hooked up with 7 years ago. Oh my gosh, you guys. This is one of those ones. 7 years ago, you hooked up with someone, and you're currently with someone and all's well and you love each other and trust each other, and this other person has a girlfriend and a child and they're a threat. Listen, we got to let go of the idea that it should be triggering that people have a sexual history prior to meeting us. Everyone does generally. It's part of sexual development. It's acceptable. If someone says that they're cool and you might get along, that's an even more powerful sign that all's well and that we can all be friends. My God. Yeah, be friends with this person. I don't think it's disrespectful. Look. Intent and impact both matter. So although there's nothing wrong with the concept, your boyfriend's feelings were hurt, attend to that part. Hey, I'm sorry that what I said hurt your feelings. I really care about you. I love you. I don't like knowing that you're hurt. And what I said, I actually stand behind. I still think it's okay for me to acknowledge that the person I hooked up with 8 years ago, 7 years ago, who's not a threat because we love each other and all's well, that you guys might get along and you might be able to be friends. Like, I actually like the concept of people being friends with other people's exes or hookups. Like, oof. Especially if you live in a small town. But you can still tend to his feelings, right? The intent was good, but the impact was his feelings were hurt. You can kind of hold both. All right. Sliding CDMs is brought to you by our friends at Trojan Condoms because it's a big old sexy world. And we want you to explore with confidence. Well, y'all, that's our show. Thanks for hanging out with me. We'll be back tomorrow, 7 p.m. Pacific Standard Time, 10 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Guys, have an awesome night. See you tomorrow.
Love Line. This is Love Line with Dr. Chris
on Channel Q.